We'll continue to follow the breaking news, and this will be the case through the rest of this week and beyond with Hurricane Milton. Larry Richard with our anchor man, Paul Rasmussen. Yesterday, in the wake of Hamas's brutal October 7th, 2023 attack, the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, the American Jewish Committee has mobilized and globally to fight anti-Semitism. And joining us is Hillary Levine, Associate Director of AGC in the Philadelphia and New Jersey area. Hillary, appreciate your time this morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It was hard to watch yesterday because there were, as you know, a lot of stories related to what happened a year ago on October 7th. I can't imagine from your standpoint reliving that nightmare and all that's happened a year and a day since. What is your message to people who are listening, where we have a very strong Jewish community here, as you know?
Thank you. You're absolutely right. It's been an excruciating and devastating year. And exactly like you said, yesterday we sort of remembered but lived through it once again. And I have to say, for those of us living in the Jewish diaspora, and especially for Israelis, we've often said that we're still living in October 8th, 2023. For this entire year, it's just felt like October 8th. We can't really move on. While there's still hostages being held in Gaza, while Israelis can't go back to their homes in the north and south of the country, while there's still war and people can't live in peace and security. And frankly, right after October 7th happened, anti-Semitism just skyrocketed here in the United States and around the world. So what I would say is, as this just continues, we truly can't move on fully.
What do you think is the biggest misconception? Why would you imagine that would be the case, that after October 7th, anti-Semitism has, as you said, skyrocketed?
That's a great question. After October 7th, and of course, Israel immediately launched its war of self-defense against Hamas, and now, of course, Hezbollah as well, it seemed to give people, again, here in the U.S., around the world, some sort of a pass to act violently and hatefully, both verbally and physically, to the Jewish community. From the way I see it, often feelings of anti-Zionism are truly just an excuse for anti-Semitism, for acts of anti-Semitism. And of course, there's absolutely no excuse. It's just truly been a devastating and a frightening time to be Jewish. But you know what? On the other side of that coin, the Jewish people are a resilient people, and we have a lot of hope and strength, and that's sort of what's brought us forward to this day.
And what do you say when people, and you've heard the protests, say that we've got to stop these wars in the Middle East? This has been going on really for thousands of years, these battles. But in the real world we are in today, how do we make a change?
So October 7th happened, Israel didn't ask for this war. This is truly just a war of self-defense. If Hamas laid down its weapons, if there was a deal to bring the hostages home, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. We need to get to a place where both peoples, Israelis and Palestinians, can live in peace and security, and that Israeli citizens don't no longer have to live in daily fear of rockets devastating their lives and terrorizing themselves. We can't live like this anymore. We have to get to a place where there's some sort of a deal.
This is the Big K Morning Show, and every Tuesday at this time, As of last week, the following is brought to you by Independence Health System, expert care here, and we will feature a medical professional each and every week. And today, Dr. Sharon Goldstein joins us via our video mix. You can see Good Doctor at kdkradio.com while hearing her on the radio. Doctor, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Larry.
And Dr. Goldstein is the medical director of the Breast Health Center in the Westmoreland area. And October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, as many people are aware, what a lot of people might not be aware of, that breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women, exceeded only by skin cancer. I'm actually surprised skin cancer is that prominent, Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. Probably a mixture of genetics and our exposure to UV light.
And by the numbers, the second leading cause of cancer death in women is breast cancer, exceeded only by lung cancer. So I think a lot of women, obviously, this is top of mind, especially this month. So let's start with a baseline. And fortunately, death rates are declining because of advanced screening. So when should a woman begin the screening process for breast cancer?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because that is something of a moving target. So the United States Protective Services Task Force, the USPSTF, recently did change their recommendations, but most of us in the breast cancer world prefer that women start their screening, average risk women start their screening at the age of 40, and then get yearly mammograms thereafter. Different groups, the American College of Radiology, the American College of Surgeons, the American Society of Breast Surgeons, we are interested in screening women throughout their lifetime after the age of 40, and that's even in older women. But there are screening guidelines from other organizations that ask for people to stop screening at the age of 74, but that is not my thinking.
And what do you think, Doc?
I think that all women need to be getting a mammogram after the age of 40. And the exception to that would be younger women with a strong family history. So at Independence Health, we have a very robust high-risk clinic. And women at the age of 25 should be getting assessed for their risk of their lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. And if a woman has over a 20% lifetime risk of developing breast cancer, we see them in the clinic and we talk about preventative measures, and those are lifestyle things. Also, certain medications can decrease the risk of developing breast cancer by 50% or more. And we talk about the screening recommendations for early diagnosis. And like you said, women who get screened do much better overall. There's at least a 25% decrease in the death rate from breast cancer in women who get regular screening. So they're seen in the clinic. We do genetic testing, and we will tailor what they need to their own specific situation.
We're with Dr. Sharon Goldstein, Medical Director of Breast Health Center, Westmoreland Area, Independence Health System. So, Doctor, technology obviously constantly changing screening-wise in terms of, I know so many people have dealt with this when they get a diagnosis of breast cancer. It means a lot, but it's such devastating news up front, right? And then what have we done in terms of being able to treat women who are dealing with breast cancer?
So the survival rate for breast cancer has really gone way up. And in fact, for stage one breast cancer, which is an early stage breast cancer, the 10-year survival exceeds 95%. So getting screened early and finding these cancers early really is advantageous. In our centers, we have a lot of technology to assist in early diagnosis. So we do 3D mammography on every patient. We have, of course, mammograms, but also automated breast ultrasound. And that's really for women as a screening tool who have very dense breasts. We also have regular handheld diagnostic ultrasound. We do a breast MRI on women who are high risk, women who have very dense breasts, who have lesions that are harder to qualify. We can do breast MRI biopsies, stereotactic biopsies, which is a mammogram guided biopsy. Like I mentioned, we do a lot of genetic testing. And of course, people come in to see the physician and the PAs for exams.
Yeah, and it's as a doctor, obviously, it's a process of treating just the patient and family too, physically and emotionally, to support this journey.
Yeah, exactly. I always think of breast cancer as a family disease. People come into our office, they'll have their partner with them, their children, their sister, brother, and it really affects everybody. And we actually pay a lot of attention. So most of our patients are women, but about 1% of the breast cancer patients are men. But we always really look at the patient's partner, husband, whoever's with them. And we really try to address their emotional health as well, because it can be a devastating diagnosis. And people come in. A lot of our job is really reassuring people, talking them in off the ledge, letting them know what their options are and how good their prognosis is likely to be.
We appreciate the work you and your staff do each and every day. Dr. Sharon Goldstein, Medical Director of the Breast Health Center, Westmoreland Area Independence Health System, expert care here. Doc, thank you. Great information.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Keep up the great work. Yeah, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and over the years, I think it's been very powerful in the way we can get information to women in particular, obviously, but as Dr. Goldstein indicated, families too. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchorman, Paul Rasmussen, and we'll continue to follow the story of Hurricane Milton. We start with CBS's Christian Vemenites in the Tampa area.
The debris that still has to get cleaned up before Milton makes landfall. County officials say that they are working around the clock to do so, but time is running out. Strong winds and waves battered Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula overnight as Hurricane Milton barrels towards Florida's west coast.
If they have called for your evacuation order, I beg you, I implore you to evacuate.
Heavy highway traffic Monday showed that many Floridians are heeding those warnings, with a deadly storm surge as high as 15 feet forecast for some areas. Those planning to ride out the storm lined up for hours to fill sandbags.
With the last storm, we got flooded. So it's all about prepping this time.
Also to buy gasoline and dwindling supplies at stores, where some shelves are already empty.
Paper towel, water, and canned food boxes, everything. A lot of people, it's like going crazy buying stuff.
Residents here are still digging out after Helene struck 2 weeks ago. Now there's a race against time to remove piles of debris before Milton moves through.
We need as much of this debris picked up as possible. This creates a safety hazard.
In Tampa, staff at this zoo are rushing to secure the animals before Milton makes landfall.
We do have a lot of what we call night houses or buildings that the animals are used to going into.
The state has also set up a base camp at Tropicana Field with 10,000 beds set up for emergency workers.
This was one of the areas most impacted by Hurricane Helene's storm surge. And if the current track holds, Milton could be much worse.
CBS's Christian Vemenites in the Tampa area. So we talked about this earlier, Paul. It looks like, and they're not 100% sure exact landfall, but it makes such a big difference, even a few miles, really, north or south of where the storm will hit. Tampa hasn't had a direct hit like this, although they're still reeling from Hurricane Helene 11 days ago, and they believe this will cut through the peninsula of Florida and maintain hurricane status as it does, maybe dropping to a hurricane one before it goes back into the Atlantic or into the Atlantic.
Right. That's the most recent tracking map from the National Hurricane Center shows that it hits the Florida coast at 1 a.m. now on Thursday as a major hurricane. goes across central Florida, and it's still at hurricane strength when it emerges back over open water and then down to a tropical storm as it moves away from the continent. But my concern is that this thing's, maybe we get some wind shear and maybe we get a little bit of a reduction in speed and it goes in as a Category 3 storm, which would certainly be far better than what we were looking at earlier today.
The potential even for a Hurricane 5 status. That said, as you probably have seen, all the networks are showing social media, the highways out of town for Florida residents are just jammed, bumper to bumper.
It's like a sea of red lights. You're looking from behind and you see the brake lights and it's just all lanes going out.
Yeah, and they've allowed people to drive on the berm just to get the people moving. And I would be concerned, Paul, if you didn't have fuel. It's been scarce in some areas to get, and then you're in these bumper-to-bumper traffic situations, you know, just adds to the anxiety level. Travel-wise, Tampa International Airport will close here in just a little over an hour, and then St. Pete Clearwater will close a little later, and then Orlando International is expected to close tomorrow at 8 a.m., and Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Jacksonville airports, as of this hour, are to remain open. So if you're traveling in that direction, it could be a challenge.
In terms of rainfall, Larry, there's a area just north of Tampa Bay, I mean, just adjacent to the Tampa Bay physically, that could get as much as 12 to 16 inches of rain. There's a small area there. The rest is south of Tampa, not looking too bad, 4 to 6 inches, 2 to 4 inches as you go further to the south. The problem is not the rain, it's the storm surge itself, which is projected to be as high as 15 feet in some places between, say, Tampa Bay and, Bonita Beach.
Yeah, no one here could imagine a 15-foot tidal surge. Look everywhere you go today and look up and then look a little further up.
Yeah.
It's 15 feet. It's pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I saw this meteorologist last night from, I guess he's very well known down in that area. He's been there a long time, seen a lot of storms. He was getting choked up on the air just talking about the strength of the storm.
Yeah. So the storm surge, of course, will wreak havoc along the western coastline of the peninsula itself. But the other consideration that we've got to think about here is while this thing is over the peninsula, while Milton is churning away heading for the Atlantic, you know, as still a hurricane of some type, probably a one or a two at that point, I would assume. That's the kind of a hurricane that can, you know, bring a lot of power outages for a very long period of time. And it's going to be going out just above the Space Coast area from the track that we're looking at right now. So yeah. We're talking Melbourne, Cocoa Beach.
Well, right.
Daytona.
In line is Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously a huge destination every day of the year.
It's almost like Milton's going to jump on in Florida and go on I-4 across the state.
Going to follow that path. So we'll continue to bring you updates on Hurricane Milton and its powerful impact and then the aftermath. The people, though, in the south, which I'm talking about north of Florida, in Georgia, Tennessee, the Carolinas, apparently will not see the impact of this because they're still obviously reeling from their catastrophic flooding in many parts of the region, especially in western North Carolina. So we'll keep you posted on the Big K Morning Show. Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour with Paul Rasmussen, Spirit Airlines. Their first footprint here actually was in Latrobe, and they're the only real commercial airline that functions out of Latrobe. Of course, years later, they added Pittsburgh International, but Paul, as you reported last week, they filed for reorganization. So reports Spirit Air, they were considering filing for bankruptcy protection as of Friday.
Yeah, and they were dialing back their service in a number of communities, including here in Pittsburgh. Let me grab that real quick here.
Yeah, apparently part of the reason was, if you had heard, that there was a merger opportunity with JetBlue and Spirit that got shot down.
Yep. So I guess they were banking on that merger to sustain their operations. Their two routes are being dropped at Pittsburgh International, the ones that they just started flying back in the summer months to Boston and New York, LaGuardia. So the Boston-Logan service ended yesterday, and then LaGuardia will go down on November 6th. They're ending service on 32 routes in all, Larry, and it said in a statement, these schedule changes are being made to focus on their strongest performing routes. Well, what does that tell you? And now we have the speculation about the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing. So the airline business, as you know, is volatile, and bankruptcies are not uncommon in that sector.
So we'll get an update on that and more, and we'll continue to keep you posted on Hurricane Milton.